Welcome to Gleaning and Gathering. I'm your host, Eric Heinlich. Today, I am by myself again here in the studio. Kaylin is busy, so you just get me. And today, I am reflecting on planning, particularly making a plan after your first plan has blown up. I love what Mike Tyson said. He said, everybody has a plan until they get hit in the face. And life has a way of just kind of hitting you in the face. And so, you know, I made some plans and some of them have worked out. But I thought it might be helpful to share with you a few of the things that I'm gleaning in terms of replanning. And so, you know, there's the plan that you make and you've got this grandiose idea. And for me, I always have these grand plans and they look beautiful in my head and then life happens. And so what I'm doing right now is I am verbally processing what I'm doing. And so for all 10 of you that listen to this podcast, welcome. For the rest of you, this is just Eric's cheap version of therapy. So just want to make that clear. I think a number of people probably deal with this. And the way that you deal with this may be different, but for me, there's been a few things over the years that as I've tried things that were crazy big, things that were crazy hard, I'm talking about like starting a wake cafe, there's the challenge of pushing through to the finish line with any project that you face and the inevitable challenges that you'll face along the way that you had no idea you would face when you first started. I think it was my friend John Whiteman that said, you know, you can't cross a stream in two small leaps. You either do it or you don't. And so there are those points when you have committed yourself, you know, you're already in the air and you realize, this is not going to land well. What do you do? What do you do when you have splashed down in the middle of the stream, so to speak, and here you are? What now? One of the things that's been helpful to me is to start with why. And actually, probably even before starting with why, starting with what kind of person do I want to be? Not just what kinds of things do I want to do? You know, I've been to a few funerals in my time. And as they get up and eulogize the person, sometimes you're wondering who in the world they're talking about. Because you can hardly recognize the person. You know, he's all this and that and the other thing. But what kind of a person would I want to be if I were standing giving my eulogy, knowing myself, I was the one who was eulogizing this person in the casket? That is me. What would I say about myself? What things would I want to be true and that would be true when said about me at the end of my life looking back? You know, that's a whole different thing than the whitewashed, sanitized version of someone else's perception of you that has gone through a very narrow lens of what they actually see about you. You, the person, know what is the real deal with yourself. And what kinds of things do you want to be true about you looking back on your life? So for me, I gave some time and reflection to this. And in the 8 areas that I am currently working, I've prioritized those. And over the years, I've honed these, developed these. This is an example of what I'm talking about. I want to be humble, caring, and helpful. Throughout my life, words, and actions, I want to bring glory to God. I want to be healthy body, soul, and spirit so that I can invest myself for the cause of Christ and make an eternal difference. As a spouse, I want to be loving, attentive, faithful, and encouraging. I want to be a friend to my wife and help her to flourish in her God-given abilities. I don't want to just be housemates existing together. Instead, I want to spend the rest of my life dating her and growing old together. As a parent, I want to be actively involved. I want to be approachable, compassionate, and consistent. I want our children to know me as their father and to know that I had time for them. I want to be more concerned with keeping their heart than I am on cultivating correct performance. I want to teach them our biblical holistic worldview. I want to impart to them my sense of virtue. I want to educate and equip them to take their place in their future homes as humble servants of God. As a friend, I want to be a friend who puts the needs, desires, and interests of my friends ahead of my own. I want to really listen and to invest in real relationships. I don't want to be a friend who is constantly looking for what they can do for me. Instead, I want to love them for who they are. I want to be responsive, answering their calls, emails, and letters promptly and lovingly. As a pastor, I want to know God and make Him known. I want to help people draw closer to God and to be more authentic disciples of Christ through a clearer understanding of His Word, His will, and His wisdom. I don't want people to necessarily think of me as a good pulpiteer, but instead to be challenged and convicted to change because of the message. As an author, I want to be a prolific, articulate author. I want to be someone with a clear view of how what I say or write will make someone's life better. I want to write from my heart things that will give people a compelling, winsome vision of a life and world where Christ is King. As the director of Victory Acres, I want to be a proactive, visionary leader that leads by example and action. I want to share the vision of Victory Acres with those key donors in such a way that the resources needed to establish the farm as a place of hospitality, healing, and discipleship will be available. As a director of development at Heartland, I want to build a team that will steward the relationship with individuals and organizations who will invest the financial resources into the organization of Heartland Christian School to make our vision of partnering with parents to develop Christ-like leaders a reality. So that's me. That's the kind of person that I want to be. Those are listed in order of importance for me. Those are priorities. Starting with that, starting with who I want to be, is where I would encourage you to begin. And if you haven't done that, if you haven't written out what kind of a person specifically, short paragraph, but specifics, do I want to be in this particular role or area? I would encourage you to do that. And then I would encourage you to take the next step and ask this question. What kinds of things, if done consistently, would make me that kind of person? There are specific things that you probably could bring to mind, and I'm talking about specific, actionable things that if you did them regularly, would make you the kind of person. What are those things? And then begin to implement a process of putting those into your schedule first. Make a plan and start with why. Why would I do this? And having a clear understanding, because this is who I want to be, not just these are some activities that I think I should do, really helps to get it deep down into our identity. You know, there's a difference between saying, you know, I'm going to try to go to the gym and being a person who is healthy body, soul, and spirit, so that I can invest myself for the cause of Christ. That's who I am. That's who I am becoming. And therefore, these actions flow out of that identity. I think that it's important as you're making a plan to know why you would do this at all. Why is it that you would do it? And that it be rooted, ideally, in identity. I think as you continue with making a plan, though, you need to continue with who. So start with why, but continue with who. Now, I think it's important in every aspect of our life to recognize that people are the most important part of our lives. Every one of my roles has at its heart people, who I want to be as a spouse. Me in relation to my wife, as a parent, me in relationship to my children, as a friend, me in relationship to that circle of people that I call my friends. as a pastor, the people who are part of our congregation. You need to start with why, but you need to continue with who. And so I would just encourage you, you know, our lives are limited. We are limited creatures. You cannot be in relationship with 4,900 Facebook friends. And the fact that we actually think we can is part of the problem. This hubris that says, you know, I can have room in my life for all these people. You can't. It's not possible. This is not scalable. And so saying yes to something is saying no to something else. And so when you're saying yes to that one more speaking engagement, you are saying no to your wife and to your kids. Let's just be clear about that. That may not be a bad thing. It's just a thing. And as my friend Gabe Norris says, people love you and have a wonderful plan for your life. And it really doesn't matter what your message is and how good you are. I mean, it'd be fairly good to have people asking you, but you're going to have people asking you if you're doing something. And so the question that you have to have decided really before that is, what's more important to me? So as you're making your plan, you have to continue with who, because not everyone's going to be in that picture. You say, well, Eric, that's not very kind. I mean, if people want to be involved in your life, they should be. Says who? No. There are at times people who feel badly about when I have committed time to them and say, well, I know you're a really busy person. Well, we are all busy. But I am choosing to spend this time with you. And you can trust me to guard my time. I'm not going to give you 1 minute of my time more than what I choose to give you. But because I have a plan, and right now this is a time that I have committed to sharing with you, I can be completely and totally present in that moment. What happens is if you have this kind of intentionality, then as you develop a plan, as you realize that the way you spend your days is the way you spend your life, that the kinds of relationships that you're investing in, the kinds of people that you're spending time with on a regular basis, is not just a matter of happenstance. This just happened to happen like this. But you are making choices, and those choices are then either building and developing the life that you want and that before God you intend to have, or not. I think another thing that's important is to have a fallback or a default position with the plan. So I think as a leader, one of the questions that I've had to wrestle with is, what do I do if this doesn't work? And you say, well, that doesn't sound like a very faith-filled kind of planning process. Of course it's going to work. If it's God's will, it will work out. Well, again, I would just ask, where did you find that in the Bible? If it's God's will, it will all work out. I hear that, but I've seen plenty of situations where it didn't work out, quote unquote. I mean, did it work out for Paul and Silas in the Philippian jail? Yeah, after the fact. But it depends upon at what point in that story you're looking at. And so I think that having a very clear, this is what we're going to do. This is home base. This is where we'll go back to. This is our default position, I think is important. Because as we move forward, it's important to know, if this doesn't develop as I think that it will, and as I hope it will, and as I'm planning and working toward, what is my default position? What will I go back to? And having that fallback position, I think, is really important to being able to take risk and work forward. For instance, in the situation with Awake Cafe, there were plenty of times along the way. We received the building in 2015, and we did a lot of planning. We did a lot of work in trying to just get ready. and were dealing with an architect that couldn't get the job done and continued to string us along, and at the end of the day was not able to complete it. And so we had to go with architect number two. And architect number two was trying to take drawings that they didn't create and rework them. And there was just a whole lot of challenges with that. And my original estimate of what it would take to get Awake Cafe open was only off by an order of magnitude. That's all. 10 more than what I thought. Massively, massively underestimated. But what do you do when you're into the project and you are trying to figure out the path forward? And so my default position again was to come back to, yes, we're going to do this, but this may take more time than what we thought. And so let's take a step back. Let's regroup. Let's wait for God to provide more resources. And when he does, we'll take the next step. And so we were able to open Awake Cafe debt-free. We had no idea when we opened in 2019 that the pandemic was going to hit in 2020 and that Michigan was going to essentially shut down restaurants. And if we had had a payment and if we were trying to push through and borrow a bunch of money, we would have been so in trouble. But because we didn't have a payment and we were able to, again, take a step back and just run with a crew that was bare bones at times, but we were able to stay open throughout the entire pandemic with carryout only, we were able to continue. And during that time, we built relationships that really became the solid core of a customer base that continues to this day. It's a customer base that we were able to build upon. But having a fallback position again and again of, okay, we've gotten some gains, now we're going to consolidate those gains, and we're going to hold the ground that we have gained and wait for a better day, was the plan. And because of that, thankfully, we were able to weather the storm of COVID and we were able to emerge from that with a solid customer base and continue to add market share and move in a direction of profitability. It wasn't what we originally thought it would look like, but it was progress. So I think as a leader, having that question of what will I do if it all goes wrong? What is my default position? And as one of my friends says, make all of your plans subject to smash. It's not that we don't plan. We do. We absolutely do. But we recognize that we live in a world where things happen and our plans are flexible enough and resilient enough that even when things happen that are completely out of our control, that it doesn't completely knock us out of the box. That we're not in a position where it's like, oh, okay, well, I guess it's not going to work anymore. Because we already have thought through, okay, if this doesn't work, this is our fallback position. This is where we're going to go back to. In my work currently at Heartland Christian School, I'm dependent upon a number of other people who have key relationships to help me to make connections with other people. And it's one of those challenging situations where, again, you're not just asking people for money, but you're also asking people to help you with connections to people that you don't have a relationship with. And so what do you do when they don't respond? What do you do when what you're doing is dependent upon somebody else doing something and you have no control over them? No control over whether or not they return your phone calls or whether they ever return your emails or whether they ever respond to your communications. What do you do? And so, again, putting another line in the water, figuring out what are we going to do to continue to move forward, even when people that should be helping you aren't. And their attitude towards it is, you know, knock yourself out. good luck. That's what we hire you for. Let's see if you can get this job done. When in reality, you can't get the job done without them. They have to participate. And so there's frustration for me as a leader in trying to lead when others that you are trying to lead aren't communicative. But I think that's true for every leader in every situation. 80% of the people do 20% of the work. They don't show up. They don't respond to phone calls. They don't listen. They don't participate. They come when they want. They do what they want. And what does it leave? It leaves the 20% of people doing 80% of the work. It's the people that are there before everybody else, and they're leaving after everyone else, and they're trying to make it happen. And as a leader, my guess is that you're one of those people. You're one of the 20%. And I think one of the challenges of leadership is, can we maintain our equilibrium in the middle of that? Can we make sure that we're putting our own oxygen mask on, that we are caring for our own heart, that we are practicing what we preach in a way that we will still be in the game 10 years from now, 20 years from now, that we're not going to grow weary in well-doing, because in due season we will reap if we faint not. We're just getting ready to start our 19th growing season here at Victory Acres. And when I think back to that very first growing season, we were just getting started, spring of 2006, and my grandfather had just passed away. He was an amazing man. And I remember as I stood by his bedside and our family was gathered around and we were singing, and as his spirit just so peacefully left his body and he slipped into eternity, I remember the presence of God that was in that place. It was his dying wish that Victory Acres would be this place of hospitality and healing that I had described to him. And that first conversation that we had back in October 2005 after that 3-day prayer retreat that I took here at the farm. And we made a plan, and we did our best to try to follow through on that plan. But there were so many challenges along that road. As we started the farm, we had no idea what we were doing. You know, we went from not knowing what a CSA was in January to trying to run one in March. This idea of community-supported agriculture was just brand new to us. There was nothing else like it here in Indiana at the time. There were lots of CSAs nationally, but nothing here. And so how do you describe something to people that have never heard of this before and get them to buy into this new concept? There were 23 very courageous families that signed up that first year. $400. They received a share of the produce, shared in the risk and reward of the farm, and they had no idea whether or not they were going to get anything. We brought people from Indianapolis, and I remember our very first planting day. It was just organized chaos, although I would say more chaos than organized. We had plowed up some ground, and we had disked it down, and now we were trying to take some rotor tillers and get it moderately ready, and stringing strings and trying to get rows relatively straight. And we had some seeds that we had purchased and we were trying to plant, mostly with people that came with us from Indianapolis that day, from homeless shelters and kids that had never been on the farm before in their life. And we drove the church bus up here and we were going to plant this farm. It was exciting. And so here we were in the middle of it all. And in the middle of it, this Taylor student shows up, just finishing his master's degree in environmental science, Dan Perkins from Taylor University had just finished a year-long apprenticeship in Caretaker Farm in Massachusetts, one of the premier CSAs in the country. And he shows up, and here we are, and he sees this rabble, you know, poking seeds in the ground, and thinks, wow, these guys need help. And he stuck around. He volunteered that first year. He ended up becoming our very first farm manager, CSA manager. And over the next 3 years, he grew it and developed it and really set in place practices that continued long after him. And his first intern became our second farm manager. And here we were, off and rolling. And God provided the resources through the CSA for us to be able to make the farm payment and for us to be able to see Grandma and Grandpa both home safely to heaven and able to live in their own home, which was one of the goals that I had, a way of helping them to be able to provide the resources needed for them during those twilight years of their life. And so one of the things that I want to encourage you with is that while we make our plans subject to smash and things go wrong, it's also true that things go right. As my friend Darren Campbell would say, God stacks the deck in your favor. And there are plenty of times along the way that I look back and I say, for all practical purposes, this should not have worked. And yet it did. And I believe that having faith is taking that step because we believe and we know that this is the direction that God is leading us to go. How is it going to work out? We don't know that. We don't know what's around the bend. We don't know what's in front of us. And yet we do know this is what God is leading us to do. And so with his direction, we are taking those next steps in faith that he's going to provide the Dan Perkins that we don't even know are there. That he's going to provide the resources that are needed just when we need them. Just this past week at Victory Acres, we received two gifts in the mail, completely unexpected, but two gifts that were a significant boost to the work here. And as I opened those, again, 2 days in a row, one came on Thursday, one came on Friday, I was just so humbled, so blown away, so incredibly grateful. But I was reminded of what Scripture says. Don't grow weary in well-doing, for in due season you will reap if you faint not. That's the promise. There is a harvest coming, and we will reap if we just don't faint. I don't know where you're at in all this, but I know that there's plenty of leaders that are out there that you've made plans and you've worked hard. And you've tried your best to do what you can before God, and yet you are facing failure, or what looks like failure right now. You're facing right now a situation where, like, what am I supposed to do? There are times where God redirects. We have this plan, and we move forward, but he redirects it. And it's not that what we were doing was a bad thing. It may have been a very good thing. It just may have been the wrong time for that thing. And so we don't need to take that personally or think that somehow it's a failure. Nothing is wasted in God's economy. And God is able to take the effort, the things that we did, and turn them and use them in ways that we never dreamed of. But I think that as we're planning, we have to hold those plans loosely and recognize that the plan is not the point. The point is to glorify God. And so, Lord, however you're best glorified, so be it. That's where I'm at right now. You know, we made these plans for 2 all-night prayer gatherings, and It's been a blessing to a number of people, and we've got another time coming up this Friday. And I'm praying that God will use it. But you know what? I have no grandiose ideas that this is the silver bullet. This is the thing. And everybody and his brother is going to join us. They're not. They're not. And that's okay. I've made my plans. I've endeavored to do what we can to promote and to spread the word and get that out there as broadly as we can. But now the results are in God's hands. What he chooses to do with it really has no impact on my feeling of worth. I minded him. I think the problem comes in many times as leaders when we allow our identity to get caught up in the things we do. This is who I am. You know, for 25 years, I was a city ministry guy. That's what I was known for. And so who am I now that I'm no longer the director of urban ministry for Evangelistic Faith Mission? I'm who I always was. Eric Heimlich, child of God. That's it. My identity hasn't changed. Because my identity is not wrapped up in the things that I'm doing. My identity is deeper than that. And my understanding of who I am in Christ is the fundamental thing that should be driving what I do in a day-to-day basis. And these are a few of the things that I'm chewing on right now and that I just wanted to share with you today for Gleaning and Gathering. God bless.